Welcome to Bites, a podcast produced by the Rover Tobacco Control Library at UC Davis. I'm Joseph Martin, and in this special episode of the podcast, we're going to be speaking with Dr. Michael Ong, who is chair of the Tobacco Education and Research Oversight Committee, also known as TROC. Dr. Ong will be joining us to discuss TROC's new strategic plan for ending the tobacco epidemic in California, titled Achieving Health Equity Toward a Commercial Tobacco-Free California 2021-2022. The plan provides guidance for the California Tobacco Control Program, the Tobacco Use Prevention Education Program, and the Tobacco-Related Disease Research Program as they seek to put an end to tobacco-related health harms in our state. If you haven't seen the plan and would like a copy, you can download one by logging onto the internet, navigating to the CTCP homepage, and clicking on the TROC link you'll find in the left-hand panel. Now, our guest, Dr. Ong, is chair of TROC. He's also a professor in residence of medicine and health policy and management at UCLA, a practicing general internist, and a researcher whose work focuses on improving the delivery of efficient and effective health care by general internal medicine physicians. In addition to his work with TROC, he also serves to help direct numerous public health research organizations and initiatives. We're very fortunate he was able to make the time to join us via telephone, so let's welcome him to the podcast. Thank you for speaking with us, Dr. Ong.
It's my pleasure to be on with you today.
Maybe we should start with a little background. How often does TROC put out a strategic plan, and what's the purpose behind that process?
So the Tobacco Education Research Oversight Committee, or TROC, is mandated to put out a plan every 2 years. And so we began work on this current plan 2 years ago to help position the field for what we think might be needed to be done over the next 2 years to really achieve a commercial tobacco-free California, which is what we want to see.
Now, the new strategic plan is titled Achieving Health Equity, and health equity is an idea that is central to many of the goals that are outlined in the document. So what do we mean when we say health equity, and why is this idea so important to what we need to do in tobacco control?
So while we've done a great job reducing tobacco use in California generally, we know that there are some populations that still have high tobacco use rates, much higher than the average California population. And so TROC really wanted to accelerate tobacco use rate reductions for these populations so that their rates will be more closely reflective of what the rest of all of us in California are able to enjoy. And so when we think about achieving health equity, what we want to have happen for all populations in California is to enjoy that same low tobacco use rate so that we can all be healthy and really, as I said, achieve that vision that TROC has for a commercial tobacco-free California.
When we talk about health equity, another concept that comes up a lot is priority populations. I know we don't have time here to discuss all of them, but can you say a little about who our priority populations are and why it's important that we focus on them in the coming years?
So when we talk about priority populations in tobacco control, these are those groups that have high rates of tobacco use that also might experience higher rates of secondhand or even thirdhand smoke exposure, and are disproportionately targeted by the tobacco industry. And so these groups are then going to all have higher rates than expected of tobacco-related disease, which we want to prevent. And so, some examples of priority populations that we traditionally think about in California include things, let's say, like African-Americans, Latino populations, some of the Asian American populations. We know, for example, Korean American men have a very high tobacco use rate. American Indian and Alaskan Native populations also have very high tobacco use rates, even though they're a small proportion of the population. But things are not just based on race ethnicity alone. We know that the LGBTQ population also has high tobacco use rates. We know that that education matters in terms of tobacco use, and so individuals with low socioeconomic status or limited education tend to have high rates of tobacco use. We see high tobacco use rates in rural areas. We know that Traditionally, because tobacco was given out in the military, that military personnel and veterans have high tobacco use rates. We know that people with substance use disorders and behavioral health conditions tend to have high tobacco use rates as well. And we also care a lot about school-age youth. So there are many different parts of the California population that fall into that definition of priority populations. But I think that the main thing is that we know that these are groups that need extra attention beyond what we would do for, California in general. And so we really want to dedicate resources to reduce their tobacco use rates or their exposure to the tobacco industry marketing.
So what can we do to improve our ability to reach out to priority populations? What should we be doing to make that happen?
So the great thing is that with the new funding that we have in California to work on tobacco control through Proposition 56, the agencies that receive funds from Proposition 56, and specifically the California Department of Public Health and the California Department of Education, are required to spend at least 15% of their funds to accelerate and monitor declines in tobacco use in priority populations. And so I think that everybody is really excited to really work with these priority populations. And we really want everyone in tobacco control to really do all that they can to work, with these populations. And so we know that, funding is going to be prioritized for these populations to develop ways to reduce their tobacco use. You know, we also want to make sure that we're doing a good job, and we want to make sure that as we're implementing some of these interventions that we're evaluating them to make sure that it's doing what we expect. And if we need to make course corrections or make changes, we want to know as soon as possible so that we can continue to bring those rates down. And I think that the most important thing is really working closely with these communities for these priority populations to really make sure that they're engaged in the planning and implementation, because that will really be the key to success. If we're an outside group that is coming to a population that really hasn't done a lot of work in tobacco control, what we often find is that the strategies that we have used in other populations don't always translate very well, and we want to really work hand-in-hand with these communities to make sure that we're doing the right thing, that we're really engaging people in a way that they want to be engaged and would be effective.
Another demographic that's mentioned frequently in the strategic plan is youth and young adults. I think everyone involved in tobacco control recognizes the importance of reaching out to young people and preventing them from initiating the tobacco habit. The master plan emphasizes this point, and it also talks about some new challenges. Can you tell us a little about how the landscape for tobacco control has changed in recent years and how this affects young people in particular?
Decade for us in tobacco control has really seen a rise in the use of vaping and electronic cigarette devices. Prior to that, we had really only seen one type of tobacco being used, which were traditional cigarettes. And these new type of vaping and electronic cigarettes have really been the type of tobacco product that youth and young adults are really using. They're not using traditional cigarettes anymore. And we've also done a great job educating our youth and young adults that traditional cigarettes are harmful for them. But when people see a new product, they don't always equate new with potential safety issues, even though these products have not really been regulated as they should have been by the Food and Drug Administration. So the safety of these type of products is still really unknown. And as a result, we've seen a lot of youth and young adults using these products, particularly when they look cool or look like they're concealable, much like some of the products that recently came out on the market. So I think that as a result, the Surgeon General from the last administration had declared a vaping epidemic 2 years ago because of the rapid rise that we had seen in the use of these type of products among youth and young adults, particularly those still in high school. And so I think that with the rates reaching as high as 30-40% of children that were evaluated in terms of using these type of products in national surveys, as well as some of the surveys that we'd seen in California, we really need to make sure that we don't end up addicting a whole new generation of individuals. And as a result, we really need to work on vaping and electronic cigarette use. And unfortunately, in terms of getting people to quit using those products, We don't have the same scientific evidence that we've had in terms of how to get people to quit using traditional cigarettes. And also in terms of the marketing, while much of it is similar to what had been done by the tobacco industry in prior decades in terms of how they would market, there are new ways that people are being reached out to via social media that we need to continue to adapt to. So I think that there's a lot of work that we still need to do to really work on these new forms of tobacco. And even the forms that we're seeing now, we're seeing new forms that are coming up in evolution that we need to be aware of. So I think that there's really been a shifting landscape in terms of the types of tobacco products that we've needed to work with. And it's really critical that individuals that work on tobacco control really let the general public know. We're always hearing from parents or from teachers that there's this crazy stuff that is going on that doesn't make it up to the national consciousness until a few years later. And so we really depend on people working on the ground in tobacco control to really get the word out to everyone.
Another one of the challenges discussed in the plan is the triangulum of tobacco, vaping, and cannabis. Could you tell us about why it's important to see these subjects in relation to each other? How do tobacco, e-cigarettes, and cannabis overlap, and why does this overlap present such challenges?
So, as I mentioned before, we've seen that tobacco use has evolved beyond traditional cigarettes to vaping and electronic cigarette devices. And I think that increasingly we've seen an overlap between how people use tobacco and cannabis. They're essentially using the same type of devices. So the types of things that we used to associate with cannabis use from, let's say, like the 1960s when people might smoke a joint, people still do that. But in terms of the ways that people are using cannabis products now has rapidly evolved, where they're using a lot of the same type of electronic cigarette and vaping devices, which can be problematic because these devices aren't regulated. And in 2019, we saw the e-cigarette and vaping-associated lung injury epidemic, or EVALI epidemic, occur. And so that by itself was highly concerning. But in addition, due to the paucity of studies on the health effects of cannabis, the general public sees cannabis as being relatively safer than how they view tobacco, which may not necessarily be the case, particularly given that there are higher potency cannabis products that are now available. And so I think that, as we have seen with what has happened in tobacco control over the past 50 years, we're seeing the same type of things in cannabis. So not only are the products overlapping in terms of, how they are being used, but we're also seeing an overlap between the industries that produce them. And so tobacco companies have bought stakes in cannabis companies, and new products are emerging that contain both tobacco and cannabis. And so I think that the one thing that we want the field of tobacco control to know is that it is okay for tobacco control and prevention grantees to integrate into their activities things that talk about exposure to cannabis secondhand smoke and dual use of tobacco and cannabis products into their policy and strategies and their educational outreach activities. These are things that are all appropriate under the funding streams that they receive. So on one hand, many groups that work on tobacco control have thought that they need to stay within their lane related just specifically to tobacco products. But because of the overlap and potentially the denormalization of a lot of the things that we have implemented in California in terms of reducing tobacco use, I think that it is really critical for tobacco control programs to really engage in terms of this overlap issue that potentially affects how we view tobacco use as well as tobacco products like electronic cigarettes and vaping devices, which are clearly tobacco products by California law. And I think that it's important for the public to understand this because this is all new for the public, particularly about the interconnectedness between tobacco and cannabis products.
Another one of the goals outlined in the master plan is to motivate more tobacco users to try to quit. And the plan also outlines some interesting strategies about how we might achieve that. Could you talk about why it's so important to encourage quit attempts and how we can leverage resources like Medi-Cal to help achieve that?
So in terms of reducing tobacco use in California, we've done a great job in terms of prevention. But in terms of reducing the overall numbers of users, we have to get more people to quit. And I think that In terms of what we can do to really get more cessation to happen, we know that many users of tobacco in California are part of health plans like Medi-Cal, and as a result, we really need to leverage those type of institutions, whether it's health plans or health systems, to really make sure that every time that a tobacco user is trying to quit, that they're getting the most help that they can to really make that an effective quit. We know that people need to do more quit attempts, but we also want to make sure that they're going to be successful. We know that it's really difficult for an individual tobacco user. The likelihood of them being able to quit in a given year is around 3 to 5%. That's not very high. And even if we were going to use medications to help that, we might double or triple the odds of quitting, but that's still not very high for that individual person. So we want to try to make sure that every time that they want to try, and we know that survey after survey shows that about two-thirds of tobacco users want to quit, we want to make sure that they're going to be successful when they try, or if they are not successful, what can they do to be successful in their next quit attempt? And so I think that this really needs to be seen as a chronic disease, that we're not assuming that we're going to be able to declare victory after one quit attempt, but that this is something that we're going to have to continue to work with these populations to really ensure that they stay tobacco-free. We know that relapse happens, but we want to make sure that we encourage them to continue to be as tobacco-free as possible so that they can be as healthy as possible.
The strategic plan also talks about secondary impacts of tobacco, such as secondhand smoke and tobacco product waste. Can you tell us about why those are important aspects of the plan and how we can address those problems?
So tobacco doesn't just have direct effects on the user, but it affects everybody else too. And it affects people in terms of the secondhand smoke effects. We know that secondhand smoke causes cardiovascular problems in people that are exposed to secondhand smoke, as well as it increases their risk for cancers, and there are other health conditions that also get worse as a result of being exposed to secondhand smoke. So it's really important to try to reduce overall exposure. We've done a great job in California in terms of reducing secondhand smoke exposure, but we're not all the way there yet, and so we still could be doing better. So we want to make sure that we sustain what we've gained, and also make sure that other people across California are equally able to enjoy being free from secondhand smoke exposure. Tobacco product waste is huge. In terms of just thinking about the amount of litter that occurs just from people dropping cigarette butts is really enormous. When you think about per piece in terms of each piece of litter that occurs in California. There was a survey a number of years ago by Caltrans that listed cigarette butts as the number one litter item in California. We know that when people do beach cleanups, that's the number one item that they find when they're doing beach cleanups. And not only is it problematic just because by pure counts, but these things don't degrade. And so they last for a long period of time and leach things into the environment. So it's really important to try to reduce tobacco product waste. And as we see these new forms of tobacco that are being used, there's battery waste, you know, there's other sorts of things that are in these devices that are heavy metal products that potentially can be more problematic than what we saw just from traditional cigarettes. So it's really important that we look at all aspects of how tobacco can affect the environment that we live in, both in terms of directly to us as non-users, but getting exposed to secondhand smoke, as well as environmental degradation. You know, we want to live in a great state in California that's going to be free from all sorts of health problems. And unfortunately, tobacco products contribute substantially to that.
Now that the strategic plan is available, how do you hope to see it used? What's the best way for our colleagues working in tobacco control to access the plan and integrate it into their work?
So we want this plan to be the playbook, not only for those who are directly working on tobacco control, but for people who are not normally engaged in tobacco control to really get onto the bandwagon, to really get us to that commercial tobacco-free California. And so we think that it'll be important to bring other allies on to help advance policies that are particularly going to accelerate reductions in all forms of tobacco use, particularly among those priority populations. So what we do want to see is people working in tobacco control to get access to the plan, be familiar with it. We want them to, you know, also bring that to others in their communities so that we can get everyone onto the same goal. And ideally, we would want to also get feedback from people about the next plan that we will be putting out in 2 years. We know that we need constant tweaking of the plan to make sure that we get to our goal. Things will change. We know that there will be other forms of tobacco that we haven't even dreamt of yet that may be showing up on the horizon. There may be other types of issues that we haven't anticipated. If you asked us 10 years ago about vaping devices, we wouldn't have thought about it. So I think that it's really important to hear from the field how things are going in terms of the plan that we have put out. We want to hear feedback. We want to know, is this working or what could be done better? And that's what we would love to see the field do.
Uh-huh. Well, this has been very interesting and very useful, and I want to thank you for taking the time to speak with us, Dr. Rong.
Thanks. It's been my pleasure, and on behalf of my colleagues on the Tobacco Education and Research Oversight Committee, we really welcome participation from the field. So we would love to have people who are listening to this podcast join us for a future meeting. You can just get onto the meeting online or go in person when that's available. And let us know what else can be done to achieve our vision of a commercial tobacco-free California.
Well, that sounds like a great opportunity. Thanks again, Dr. Rong, and thank you all for listening. The Bites Podcast is a production of the Rover Tobacco Control Library, which is a funded project of the California Tobacco Control Program. We're working on a series of episodes on all the funded projects of the CTCP, as well as new research and other topics related to tobacco control. If you've got an idea for a podcast, or if you have thoughts or suggestions you'd like to share, please send me a message at joemartin@ucdavis.edu. That's all lowercase, joemartin@ucdavis.edu. I'm Joseph Martin, and this has been Bites.